Welcome to Burning the Ships podcast. I'm your host, Jason Seward, and today we've got Justin Gooden on the show. Justin is a real estate developer out of the Midwest. He's from Indianapolis, Indiana, and he'll get into his story and everything. We connected, like a lot of my guests, through social media. I was seeing kind of some projects he had going on and, you know, what he had grown, or what it, you know, just through social media, you can only know so much. So I want to connect with him and learn a little bit more about him. And, we certainly did that. Before I get into his intro, I will do JJ's joke of the week. And I've already seen this week's joke. It is very silly. But I'm going to give it because he gave it to me. JJ's joke of the week. What did the banana say to the little boy? Nothing, because bananas can't talk. And that is JJ's joke of the week. He's gonna have to do better than that, but I'm joking. I love his little jokes and his little contributions to the show. So if y'all listen a couple episodes back, he actually was here in person and told his joke. I'm gonna try to do more of that because he delivers them a lot better than I do. But anyway, let's get on to Mr. Gooden. Justin. And I'm just going to read kind of his profile, and then we'll get into the interview. And again, we cover a lot of things. Let me preface all this. This is just another good example. I talk a lot on the weekly rambles about the power of social media. And if I were not active on social media, if we were not active with this podcast and whatnot on social media, I would have never known of or had Justin pop up on my radar. But because of social media, you know, we connect through groups that we're a part of and, you know, whatnot, and then start a dialogue and a conversation through Messenger that ultimately, you know, I could tell he'd be a good fit because he had a great story. So he'll tell you all that in the interview, but he was born and raised in Indianapolis, Indiana. He's always had a passion for finance, strategy, and smart investment. Investments. He graduated with a finance degree from the Kelly School of Business in Indiana and spent years working as a multifamily underwriter for a local bank. Along the way, he recognized a common challenge. High-earning professionals wanted to invest in real estate but didn't have the time or desire to manage properties. He was determined to change that, and he left his traditional W-2 job, burned the ships, and went all in on real estate development. His company specializes now in ground-up development of luxury apartment communities, offering investors a way to participate in high-quality real estate projects without the headaches of being a landlord. He founded Gooden Development with a clear mission: to help investors earn passive income in real estate so they can build wealth in an easier way, create financial freedom, and live life on their own terms. So without further ado, let's welcome in Justin Gooden. Justin Gooden, welcome to Burning the Ships, my man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to chat with
you. Yeah, no problem, man. I was telling you before we started recording, these are my favorite episodes because I literally have never met you. We connected through social media, and we're both in the real estate space. So I think that's what connected us. But I'm always excited to learn people's story and their timeline and their careers and businesses in real time, and I get to react in real time. A lot of guests I have on here, I kind of know the story, so I'm hearing it again for the second or third time as they share it with our audience, but that's not the case here, and I like it. So what we will get started with, Justin, is I'm going to turn it over to you and let you introduce yourself to the folks and kind of walk through your story, your career, and you can craft it however you want. Just walk through, you know, where you started in real estate and where you're at now and anything else you want to add along the way.
Yeah, of course. I'm happy to. So today I'm in Indianapolis, Indiana. This is where I was born and raised. And today we're developing, you know, Class A multifamily properties from the ground up, solely focused here in Indiana. So these are, you know, typically like mixed use properties. So there's residential units up top and commercial and retail on the bottom. And we're doing that all across Indiana. We started Gooden Development last year in 2024 and are working on our second round of development now as we're here in 2025. Very laser focused on ground of development here in Indiana. But yeah, it didn't start like that. I, like I mentioned, was born and raised here in Indianapolis and kind of like went down the traditional path of, you know, going to school, buying a house, and working a W-2 job after college. And I mean, at the time, that's like what I thought was the right path for me, but it turned out it was not. So I got my first taste in real estate by doing some fix and flips and by having some rentals, you know, doing this in and around Indianapolis through my last years of college. In college, I studied finance and supply chain management at a business school here in Indianapolis. And then sort of like when I was buying these fix and flips and I was doing these rentals, I quickly found out that it wasn't passive. It wasn't as lucrative as some of these TV shows make it out to be. And it was really difficult to scale. So I knew I wanted to, you know, go in real estate full time, have it be like more worthwhile my time. I knew I needed to scale my business and go after larger properties and go into commercial multifamily. So I knew that's exactly what I wanted to do and what I wanted to learn more about that business. So after graduation, I started working for a commercial bridge lender as a multifamily underwriter. So working for the bank was awesome experience for what I do today, but basically analyzing the risk for the bank and underwriting these loans to, you know, you got to weigh the risk on the sponsor, their business plan, their projections, really, you know, make a full report and analysis, and then go present my analysis to the loan committee. And then the bank's loan committee would, you know, make the decision to extend credit or not to that borrower. So sort of like an inside glimpse of commercial real estate and how multifamily loans work. Again, like all that was awesome experience, what I do today. And about 5 years ago, left my W-2 job to pursue real estate full-time. And, you know, I started out doing real estate syndications, so buying existing properties, fixing them up, and then selling them. We scaled it up to like around like 500 multifamily units with other general partners as well, and eventually moved into ground development, which I'm happy to discuss some of those reasons as well. But yeah, I've done syndications, joint ventures, seller finance deals, and moved into ground up multifamily development.
Man, all right. So got a lot of questions. I love all that. So first I want to go back. I want to go back to the college days because this is intriguing to me. You said you were fixing flipping homes while you were in college. So now let's talk like age at that time. Were you traditional, like went to college when you were 18? So you were doing this while you were 20, 21 years old. Is that correct?
A little bit older, so like early, mid-20s, skipped a few years. Didn't go to college exactly out of high school, but yeah, skipped a few years, and then sort of like my mid-20s when I started doing that.
Okay, so you were balancing full-time student, and then you were starting to fix and flip houses, or, you know, doing that. What was your source of capital at that point? Did you have some savings built up, or were you taking hard money loans, have private lenders? What was your situation there?
Yeah, at the time, hard money loans and just using my own capital. I was also working at the same time. So working, going to school, and, you know, trying to do real estate on the side as well.
All right, let's go back then. That's a rare work ethic at that age. Let's go back in time, and I want to kind of connect the dots of very few full-time students are working. You know, a lot of students work, but very few are working, saving money enough so that they can then invest in and fix and flip real estate. So where did the work ethic come from, and where did the, were you just kind of learning by the fire or in the fire, or did you get an education prior to jumping into real estate? Just kind of a couple
in the
questions.
Fire, I mean, YouTube videos, other investors in around Indianapolis, but mainly just, you know, the internet, watching videos, whatever I can, you know, just free resources online. Yeah, like again, like the work ethic is I didn't want to, you know, just be like average my entire life. I wanted some sort of passive income. I wanted to be unique. I wanted to, you know, do what I could to build wealth. I just didn't want to like sit in the same spot my entire life. So my first thought was I needed to start investing in real estate.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is, you know, it's intriguing to me because I had those same thoughts at, you know, while I was in college and soon after, but I got a taste of, you know, I went right into insurance sales, you know, pretty much out of college. So I got a taste at a young age of a really good, consistent, easy income. Go out and sell a product, make a commission, make plenty of money. And it's very difficult to then, and I had the entrepreneur mindset, but you get sucked into that lifestyle and that pretty easy income that is hard to get out of it. So kudos for you for, like, while in college, dipping your toes into that. But then after that, you went into the W-2 world as an underwriter, it sounds like, and which was great experience. But at that point, just a couple questions here. How long did you spend in that career as an underwriter? And how long in that career did it take to realize that, okay, this is not my career. This is training ground for an entrepreneurship, a business that I'm going to create.
Yeah, great question. I think, you know, like thinking back to that day when I started working at the bank, like I knew day one, I didn't want to do this the rest of my life. I was using it as a stepping stone to where I could eventually start my own real estate company and do this full time. So day one, I probably didn't have like the best mindset as like their typical W-2 employee, because I knew I wasn't going to be there my entire life. And I knew I wanted to do something different than that. I was like really just using it as a stepping stone to do what I really wanted to do. And yeah, like as an underwriter, like you see everything. Like you see the borrower's tax returns, their income statements. You see like the cash flow they're making. You see like the $0 in taxes they're paying because of, you know, tax write-offs, depreciation they're taking. So working as an underwriter, like I saw like all these benefits that multifamily owners and operators receive from being on the investor side. So I knew I wanted to do that. And yeah, like pretty much my whole time working there, I just had that mindset as, you know, I was using this as a stepping stone to eventually go out and start my own company.
What I love about this is you know, whether it was intentional right out of the gate, like I'm going to be a multifamily underwriter, or that just is what happened. But either way, most people have to pay for that education of learning how to assess and analyze deals, right? You were getting paid for that education. So yeah, I mean, you and that's backwards from most people. Cause I mean, myself, everything I've done in real estate, I learned a little bit kind of on the job, like just ready, fire, aim, you learn as you go. But also I've always paid to get an education along the way, right? You were earning an income while learning the thing that you knew you eventually wanted to build into. And I think that's a good lesson for folks that maybe younger folks looking to figure out a way to get into this game. Go get a job that it exposes you to it. And in your case, you were exposed to probably one of the more difficult parts is knowing what a good deal is, right? Knowing how to assess it. And you got that out of the way in an early stage because they probably, not only were you getting paid for it, you probably got great training in that process, right? To learn how to do that, that you could then apply to what you went on to do. So how long did you spend in that career?
Yeah, I was there for about 2 years. So not a huge amount of time, but I definitely got some awesome experience while I was there. And it brings up a good point when you're asking how long I was there, because this is like another reason to, you know, have a plan B and know what you want to do. But working at the bank, you know, like one morning I was called into my boss's office and I was actually fired and let go out of that job, which sort of just propelled me into real estate even more. So I think like, you know, everything happens for a reason. It turned out to be like the best thing that ever happened to me in my life because I was forced into real estate, had to, you know, force me to do what I wanted to do. But yeah, I was actually fired from that role and it turned out to be like the best thing that ever happened to me.
Okay, so let's go back to that. If you had not been fired, which obviously you're thankful it happened now, but do you think, how much longer do you think, looking back on it, you would have held on to that job and advancing in that company if your hand wasn't forced?
That's a good question. I haven't thought about that, but I mean, hopefully not that long, maybe another year or two.
Did you have the train kind of rolling on what you wanted to do next? Like, you know, I know you, it sounds like you went right into syndicating and stuff like that. Did you have the ball moving in that direction before you got terminated?
Absolutely. Yeah. I was already you know, talking to potential partners. I was, you know, looking for deals, making offers on deals. I was already in motion of, you know, taking those steps to go into real estate full time.
Okay. All right. So you go from, you're let go, your hand was forced. So probably a little sooner than you were planning, but now you got to go. Was there, take us, I like getting into the mindset of like that day, you know, the day. So I share a lot on this podcast, the day that I made my mind up and turned in my letter of resignation, and the day that I turned in my laptop and I'm done with corporate America. Take us through the day that you got terminated and that kind of, pardon my language, but that, oh shit, now I've got to go. Walk us through that mindset. Was it, did you sulk in that for a week or two, or did you just get right to work? Like, I've got to make this work. Or did you look for another job?
Actually, I did not look for another job. I got right into it. So the same week I got fired, I was doing, this is an awesome story to lead into, but yeah, I didn't sulk. I wasn't upset. As like another plan B, I mean, I had a finance degree from a, you know, top 20 business school here in Indianapolis. I wasn't worried about getting another job. If I wanted to, I think I could have easily went out and got another position, but I really wanted to take the leap and start a real estate company so I could see if that worked out. But yeah, to answer your question, I didn't sulk in that for too long. The same week I got fired, I had an owner call me off a direct mail campaign that I was sending out to different owners in and around Indiana. And that was my first property that I ended up buying on the commercial multifamily side. The very same week I got fired, an owner called me. I toured it the very next day after I got fired. So, I mean, just like thinking back to that moment, I mean, one day I'm working a W-2 job, everything's normal. The very next day I'm fired and I'm touring a multifamily property, you know, very little or no experience on the commercial multifamily side. But I mean, talk about like a mindset shift. I was just forced into that role. And yeah, that was like actually my first deal that we raised capital from investors to take down that deal. And we actually have it still today, about 4 years later.
Okay. What was the unit makeup? Like, what was the size of that deal?
29 units. We purchased for $1.36 million. Me and one other co-general partner raised about $550,000 from passive investors to take down this property. And your typical value-add multifamily property was being self-managed by an owner that had it for 16 years. He lived inside one of the units. It was made up of studios, one bedrooms, and one two-bedroom unit. And yeah, typical value-add story. We increased rents by interior renovations. We paved the parking lot, which used to be a gravel parking lot, if you can believe that. Built four brand new units on site. Couple of things like in and around the exterior, sprucing that up as well. But yeah, today it's a 33-unit property. We still own it today, looking to exit here pretty soon. Fixed rate debt from a local bank, and we've paid out quarterly distributions on the property to investors. I've never skipped or paused quarterly distributions on the property so far.
So your investors are still in. You haven't refinanced them out at this point. Is that correct?
Still in.
Yeah. I got you. Yeah. That's interesting. So you built, during that process, you built four new units. Did that give you kind of the bug at that point? I know it's been a couple of years before you actually got into development, but that process, did that kind of give you the bug of, oh, okay, I can handle new development, I can handle new construction, or did that kind of scare you away initially of it?
That this particular deal did not sort of like give me the bug of new development. It was the okay. Clear kind of value add path on the property. So when we took, yeah. But yeah, that one didn't quite give me the bug on development.
Okay. So syndication, I've now been a part of several syndications, both as raising capital and as an LP. So I'm very familiar with it. But I remember when it first kind of was introduced to me several years ago, it seemed like it was an overwhelming niche in real estate. You know, at that point, all I had done is the Burr method with single family and, you know, I some small multifamily. And we had a bunch of rentals, flipped a bunch of houses, but syndication seemed like that's not what I do. That's what Grant Cardone does. The big boys do that. So how did you so quickly overcome that perceived barrier, like such a big barrier of entry? Did you have a mentor? Were you a part of a mastermind group or a coaching program to give you the confidence to go into that? Or did you just wing it? Like, how did you get into it?
Yeah, I didn't have any mentors buying this first property, but I wouldn't say I winged it either. I mean, I felt really confident in my projections, in the market, in the property. It's a property that I live about just 20 minutes away from. So I know the area. I know what rents could be. I felt confident in my projections. We had feedback from a local property management company. And I partnered on the GP side with one other local partner as well. And he had already had experience in various syndications. He was also leaving his W-2 job at the same time to go into real estate full-time. So, yeah, I felt like really confident in the deal, our projections. And I think that showed to our investors. And it's turned out to be, you know, an amazing deal for everybody involved.
Gotcha. So that was a 29 unit that y'all added a few units to that. Now, when you were going through your timeline earlier, you said, was that around 2020? 2020?
21, I believe.
21. Okay. And then from there, you went on to continue to do that up to 500 units? Is that what you said you grew it to?
Correct.
Now, was that several 30, 40, 50 unit projects, or did you eventually land a bigger, you know, 200 units, something like that?
Yeah, there's a bigger one in there that I wasn't like lead sponsor on, really kind of just partner with some other general partners to raise capital for. So there's a bigger 200 unit one in there. There's a 104 unit in Louisville, kind of same situation as that. There's some smaller properties in there, is kind of mixed in there as well. That'd be either been like joint ventures or one seller finance deal. So yeah, kind of a variety of stuff.
But everything you did during that time that you were the main operator, main sponsor, was in and around your hometown. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, got it. I like that you mentioned this early on. I think it's a key point to hit on, laser focus. So you were laser focused on your buy box, it sounds like. Like anything that you were going to take the reins on was going to be in and around an area and a market that you know very well. And you weren't going to be distracted outside of that. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say. And back then, I was probably like a little bit like more like scattergrain. But I mean, today, like looking forward at what I'm doing now, yes, like I am very much laser focused on one thing and one thing only. That's just Class A development here in Indiana. I'm not looking to go to Florida or Ohio or other places. You know, I think it's a common mistake when you're starting out and you're getting into real estate, like you kind of have that shiny object syndrome. Like you think, existing multifamily looks appealing, but then you might look at some storage units or you might look at this or that, or this market looks ideal. But like, I just think like you're doing like more harm than good. I think it's like really hard to become an expert in anything if you're trying to master like all these different things. And plus, I think it gives like your investors more confidence if you just have like more focus on one thing and in one market. So for me, moving forward, we're just laser focused on one thing, just doing development here in Indiana.
Right. And I'm super anxious to get into that conversation right now with what you have going on. But I really want to connect the dots on the timeline. So because what you're doing right now, that's another level, right? From the syndications, the value add thing, you're building ground up.
Sure.
But before we get there, I kind of want to stay here in the syndication space, you know, for a little bit longer, because, you know, I can't stress enough like that to the average real estate investor that's flipping houses or buying single family duplexes, stuff like that. This seems like such a daunting task to get into syndication and doing bigger deals. The biggest piece of it is figuring out the capital, and not just raising capital for the deal and how to structure all that. But you've done it. So you're very aware that these value add syndication deals, they're not spitting out a lot of cash flow. They're not paying your bills early on. Right. And so you got to have some source of active income, some fast money, if you will. Where was that coming from when you dove into this? Were you taking acquisition fees? Were you still flipping single family houses? What was paying the bills in the early phases?
Yeah, acquisition fees. I did already have some rentals still as well, and I been selling off some of those a couple of years ago. And yeah, since then it's just been acquisition fees and it's mainly just been it.
Yeah. Okay. And that kind of, all right, that makes sense. And then as you add the value
I'll
and,
resell and stuff like that, yeah.
yep, gotcha. Okay. And the reason I kind of want to stay here for a minute is because, again, it seems so daunting, but it really isn't. And I think a lot of that has to come through you took an unconventional route where your education, again, was in that W-2 job. So you got a lot of that early anxiety of, I don't know how to analyze a deal. I don't know how to do any of that. You got that out of the way at an early stage. So with that being behind you, what your next, I would imagine, your next step was figuring out like who to partner with and how to raise capital. So walk us through like your education and how you gained experience to go out, not just experience, but confidence to go out to potential investors and pitch what you were now doing. How did you, where did that come from, and how'd you attack that?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the answer to your question, but I think if you're really wanting to, make the switch from doing fix and flips or rentals or whatever you're doing now and go into commercial multifamily or go into these larger deals, I just think you need to like just fully immerse yourself into this world. Like you need to just there is like no more like free time for you. You need to, watch YouTube videos, read books, take people out to lunch, out to coffee. Attend local meetups, join Facebook groups. I mean, whatever you can do to like just fully immerse yourself into this world. I mean, that's exactly what I did. And I mean, still do today. Always like learning from other people, taking people out to lunch, mentors. I had mentors when I first started getting going, had mentors today. I think that'll like also shorten your learning curve, but I just think, it depends on like how bad do you want it because. Everybody starts out with zero doors and they eventually work up to like wherever they're now, but they all start like the same place that you started, and you just have to like reverse engineer your goals and figure out what you can do to get where you want to go.
I love that what you said at the end, because it's so important to reverse engineer those goals. And that I mean that has to go beyond just setting a goal and saying, okay, whatever the goal is, apply it to anything. But whatever that goal is, saying, okay, to hit this goal, I have to do this or that. No, you gotta like, and I'd love to hear you speak to this, but like, I'm in the lending space, so we're hard money lenders as our primary business on top of our real estate portfolio. But with that, we set very specific goals, but we dial it all the way back down to like the hours of every day, what KPIs we have to hit to then get to that main goal. Talk to how you attack goals. I would love to hear a little bit on that since you just touched on it.
Yeah, I mean, I set goals that I think scare me a little bit, but also are realistic. And I just set like realistic goals every year to where I know I can go, and I know that are achievable. I mean, I'm not the kind of person that's going to set goals like I want to be at like 10,000 units by next year or something unrealistic like that. I've set like really realistic goals that I know are achievable. And then I work backwards or how I can get that goal. Like for me, like I'm really good at, property analysis, finding deals, underwriting deals, and not so strong in like capital raising. So for every deal that I have, I partner with other co-general partners that can help raise the equity for my deals and for, work as a team to get that equity raised.
Yeah, I think that's important because any syndicator out there that's trying to do all of that's a recipe for disaster, man. You got to find what you're good at, and then find the folks that can play the roles of the other things, and maybe or your weaknesses, which you have identified is maybe not as a weakness, but it's not an area that you're as strong in and raising capital. So bring in partners that can do that. So I love that approach. So now, you build up to a couple hundred units. When did the idea or the thought shift from value add syndications to ground up development?
Yeah, so I went like a period of I think about a year where I couldn't find like any kind of existing, already built multifamily deal to, what we call like pencil out. I couldn't find like any kind of deal that, made sense financially to purchase. And, other people like that I'm talking to in the market are kind of like in the same situation, the same boat. you know, they're kind of like just sitting there, like spinning their wheels. And I just felt like the whole entire, you know, value add space, existing multifamily space was very inflated, very competitive. And so I knew if I wanted to continue, you know, doing deals, doing more volume, I had to make the switch into development. And I just thought, you know, longer term was just a better fit for what I wanted to do and for my goals. But yeah, I think there's actually like less competition on the development space, which, you know, allows like more opportunity for me and my company to do more deals and grow.
Yeah, I love that. We're the same way. We're kind of transitioning now into like more, we're just trying to find the right property or land that works, but you build to rent, like townhomes, stuff like that, where we zero lot line them, sell a few, but hold as many as we can. But I agree, man. I mean, if you can connect all the dots, new construction, it eliminates a lot of headaches that, you know, that you deal with through the value add syndication process. So I couldn't agree more. So that said, again, you go from the value add syndication to ground up development. That's another, like you're graduating to another level. It's another set of complex strategies and things you have to figure out. So where did you go? Was it, again, like I asked earlier, through mentorship? Did you partner with somebody that was already doing that? Or did you just kind of ready, fire, aim it?
Yeah, I think on the development side, it's extremely difficult, if not, you know, impossible to get started on the development side, unless you have a, you know, a mentor or experienced partner that could kind of help show you the ropes. So yeah, for me, I had another like local mentor, somebody who's like already been in real estate for a long time, been in development for a really long time. And so I partnered with this other developer slash mentor that I've already known for several years. And we partnered on this deal that he had going in Fishers, Indiana. I was able to come in and help raise equity for the deal, help sign on the loan and satisfy the balance sheet requirements. So yeah, I helped my mentor with his first development deal, which like really like opened my eyes to how development is, all the possibilities, the benefits. And that sort of like, you know, spurred my interest in development and so like made me, you know, made that pivot into development like full time, which I thought, you know, was a better long-term fit for my goals and what I wanted to do.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree in the sense that the way you approached it by, you know, if you were to go acquire a piece of land and you're trying to raise capital for this ground up development that you have no experience with as your first deal in that area, good luck raising capital for it, right? I mean, you know, that's that, but the way you approached it where you go to somebody with the experience, you offer to bring value to that, you get a piece of that, and now you get the experience and moving forward. So that's really good. So with that,
I'll just touch on that really quick. But I mean, yeah, good luck raising capital for it. But also, I mean, there's just so many things, so many nuances that have to happen with that deal before you even break ground on the property. Yeah. I mean, you're working with the design team, architect, civil engineer. You're working with the city back and forth. I mean, there's just so many things that you would just have to know. I mean, unless you just had a ton of money to spend and sort of like spend on expensive education for yourself. Unless you had that, it'd be extremely difficult, I think, to get that project off the ground. But again, if you have a mentor that can help show you the ropes and help you step by step through that process, which I was really fortunate to have on my side, I think that's the best possible path if you wanted to, you know, get into multifamily development.
Couldn't agree more. So what would you say? So now, I mean, you did your first development deal, you said, last year. And now have you broken ground or where are you at? Well, you said you're doing another one here in 2025. Where are you at with that one?
Yeah. So our first one, we started in February of 24. That's about 80% complete right now as we're in 2025. We're breaking ground on another project in April 2025 this year. So that one hasn't started just yet, but that one's going to be 114 units in Kokomo, Indiana. And yeah, breaking ground on that this coming year.
Gotcha. Do you think longer term like all of the portfolio you built, initially with the value add syndication? Do you see yourself kind of exiting out of those and going all in on the development as it makes sense to do?
100%. Yeah. Looking to sell everything in the near future. And yeah, just focus solely my time on development.
Yeah. It's cleaner. It's just, less headaches involved, I'm sure. So, what would you say all along this path you've been on? What are some, and it doesn't have to be business related or real estate related, but just what are some personal habits that you've developed over the years that have enabled you to have some level of success that you've had, but also stay laser focused? What are some habits you think you have developed over the years to help with that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, I'm always open to criticism. I'm always open to feedback. One thing about, my personality is, I think personally I'm, really difficult to make mad or angry. I just know, as you're going through these different obstacles, it's all going to work out in the end. So there's no point in getting upset through these, little different milestones, because I always, think back to, if this was easy, everybody would be doing it. So it's not supposed to be easy. Every kind of setback or everything that kind of obstacle that I face, with these development deals or real estate in general, I just know it's always going to work out in the end. So there's no point in getting upset in the beginning or along these steps and failing right there. Other habits that I take on, I always wake up early. I like reading. I like just being really cognizant with my time. I try not to get caught up just scrolling endlessly on social media. I don't just spend my free time watching Netflix. I'm really cognizant about my time. I know the goals that I have and what I want to do, and I'm not going to get to these goals if I'm watching Netflix every night of the week. So I'm really cognizant about how I spend my time.
Yeah, I can agree with that. And I also, I made a very big shift probably 2018, but where my routine was, I was still working in my corporate career, but I'd come home, I'd eat dinner, I'd watch whatever sporting event was on that night or ESPN. I'd wake up, it would be Sports Center on in the morning, be in the vehicle, listening to the radio. I was consuming nothing that was growing me. It was entertaining me. But when I shifted, and this has been several years now, but the only thing ever on my speakers in my vehicle is either a podcast or an audio book that's helping me improve my own development. And the only thing that comes on my TV, or I've got young kids, they're watching their shows or me watching some YouTube video that doesn't entertain me. It's educating me on whatever I want to focus on. So that shift, and just that one shift in mindset, has, exponentially improved me as a human being and as an entrepreneur and things like that. So I'm glad you touched on that. So
exactly. That comes back to how we talk about, you fully have to just immerse yourself into this world. So if you fully immerse yourself like you did, every spare minute, every spare hour you have, you're listening to a podcast or an audiobook, doing something to, better your life and your business.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, I enjoy it. It's development and it's education, but it's something I'm obsessed with. Right. I enjoy it. It's not a burden for me to, listen to an hour long podcast of somebody talking about syndications or ground up development. I'm really intrigued and curious about all these topics. So to me, it's the equivalent of, I love to golf, but it's the same thing as going and playing a 4-hour round of golf. It's entertainment for me. It's satisfying, but at the same time it's fulfilling and helping me grow as a human. So do you do any, are you into fitness, nutrition, anything like that helps you improve as well?
Yeah, definitely fitness. I try and do at least something physical every day. It doesn't have to be a full-blown workout every day, but yeah, I'm working out. I run a couple of days a week. And I like starting off my mornings doing something physical. So that could be a workout in the morning, on my off days. It could be like a simple walk around the block. I mean, just do something to get your body moving and get your blood flowing. So absolutely, yeah.
Good stuff. I ask a lot of my guests this question, and I'd be curious to hear your answer. So you got a lot of folks, and I'll go back to like my corporate career. I spent 17 years selling insurance and ultimately managing a team that sold insurance, and that evolved into higher roles in management. But the entire time there, I was motivated by the destination, which in my mind for years was the destination being either long-term retirement or my next vacation that was coming up, right? So I had to endure the journey that I was on to get to the next destination. Do you get more motivated by the journey you're on or the destination you're heading towards? Or you know, have you ever thought about this?
Haven't like really thought about this. Maybe I have, but I think I'm more motivated by the journey. Like we all think we have like some sort of like end goal. Like if I just have this, then I can sit on a beach all day. Or if I just make it to this number, then I'll be set for life. Like I like truly like love what I do. So I think like even like after like I accomplish my big goals, like I think like even like when I get there, at that time, like I'll just have another goal that I'm working towards. Like I don't think I would ever be satisfied with, you know, hitting like X amount of revenue or X amount of deals or units, whatever, and then just like retiring or just like sitting on the beach or just, you know, taking it easy the rest of my life. I just think that sounds incredibly boring. So I think, yeah, to answer your question, I think I enjoy more of the journey because I don't think that's ever going to stop for me because I really love what I do.
Yeah. So I've wrestled with this question since leaving my corporate job and now full-time entrepreneur. And the kind of the answer I've come up with is very similar to yours with is basically like it used to be the journey was a burden. It was a means to an end, which was retirement. But now like I'm trying to create a journey that I'm so passionate about that it is the destination. Like that's the destination is the journey that I don't ever want to end. I want to be in my 80s and yeah, I might be on a beach somewhere, but I'm still, you know, I'm either involved with deals or I'm facilitating deals or maybe it's coaching somebody or, you know, inspiring somebody, but that is the journey I want to create where I don't want it to end till my eyes shut forever, you know, and that's, you know, it sounds like you're on the same path. And it's interesting. I remember when I didn't think this way, that I was always thinking like excited about the next destination so much. So I would go on vacation and I remember my wife and I being in Maui. I think this was 2018 and we got there the very first day. And I remember standing on the beach with her saying, gosh, we got to plan. We got to come back here. Like we got to figure out a way to get back here. We just got here. Like we're there. Why am I thinking about the next time we get to come instead of just enjoying where my feet are, like being where your feet are? And that she called me out on it. You know, I'm glad she did. But like we don't need to think about getting back here. Let's just be here, be present. And now that's how I try to live every day. Like in the moment, I'm happy I'm here and I'm not thinking about where I'm going. You know, it's just continuing to go. So
it's awesome.
I kind of want to transition now into like where, so you're married, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Where do you see your, like, how do you view your legacy, your future legacy and what you want to, you know, for your spouse, for your family? I don't know if y'all have kids in the plans or anything like that, but how do you envision, because I got to give you a round of applause, man. You're, what you've built at such a what seems to be a very young age, you know, is very impressive. You're getting into very large things with the ground up development. That's what a lot of folks dream of, and you're there. You're in the middle of it. So, where do you see this thing going from here? What do you want your legacy to be 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now?
I really haven't thought out like 30 years from now, but I know, yeah. You know, at least like the next, you know, 5 to 10 years, this is a awesome question. Thank you for asking it. But I mean, for me, I just want to continue to like staying like laser focused on what I'm doing now in Indiana. In the next few years, I want to transition into being a fully vertically integrated company. So I want to bring in-house property management, in-house construction company, bring that under my good and development umbrella, and be a fully vertically integrated company. I'm not sure if I have like any kids in the horizon for me just yet. Still like undecided on that. Just keep working, keep building my business.
Right. Yeah. I love that, man. Do you foresee yourself staying? I know you want your business to grow in Indiana, but is that where you see you living out the rest of your career? I mean, are you happy and complacent in your hometown, or do you want to go elsewhere eventually?
Yeah. Happy here in Indiana. No plans on moving outside the state.
Yeah, same here, man. I get a lot of people. I'm from a very small town in Virginia, 6,000 people in my county. Very small. Now, everything I do is in and around that county, but I have to drive 30 minutes to get everywhere I go, like grocery store, everything. But I love it, and I'll never leave where I'm at right now. But I can grow a business beyond where I'm at, But I'm never gonna leave where. I mean, we've got our dream house on our farm and all that. And I can't ever see that changing. So, what would you give, we've kind of touched on it a little bit, and I think you've alluded to some of these answers, but go back to your college days when you were just starting out. And I'm not going to ask you if you would change anything, because I would expect that you wouldn't. Everything you did got you to where you're at now. But what advice would you give the 20, 22, 25-year-old that has this itch, they have the bug, and they're trying to figure it out, they're listening to the podcast, they just haven't taken action? What advice would you give them to go into right now?
Yeah, for me, I think you should start a thought leadership platform or multiple thought leadership platforms. And what I mean by that is starting a Facebook group, an in-person meetup, a podcast. Like, you need to do things to market what you're doing and what your business is doing. Because if nobody knows what you're doing, like, you're never going to find partners. You're never going to find investors. Brokers aren't going to take you seriously. Other people aren't going to take you seriously. I think just, creating a platform, multiple platforms where you can showcase your real estate journey, add value to other people, and really kind of just network with other people and show why you're like a thought leader in this space. So that'd be some awesome advice that I wish I would have gave myself back then is, as soon as possible, start a thought leadership platform for you and your business.
Yeah, I remember several years ago, I read one of Joe Fairless's books, but he hits on this pretty hard just about, and at the time I was deep in my corporate career, so I almost had, like, just the nature of the situation I was in, I had to almost be a secret agent on the real estate side because it was my side hustle, quote unquote. But I couldn't let the company I was working for in any way, shape, or form think that I was being pulled away from my responsibility because of a conflict with my side hustle. So I didn't grasp that until I was able to fully leave that career, of the need to just scream it from the mountaintop what I'm doing and who I am and what I'm trying to achieve and what my goals are. And once I made that transition, you're exactly right, man. If you're genuine in that, you're authentic, you add value where you can add value and look to lead with that value, your network grows and that network will feed you. And you're a great example of that, it sounds like.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. So, Justin, as we kind of wrap up now, you mentioned you're a big reader. I'm not going to ask you your favorite book, because if you've read a lot of books, you probably have, a lot of favorites. But what are some key books along the way that have inspired you, facilitated growth within you, and anything else you want? Just talk about some books that you think were pivotal for you.
Yeah, Stay Sane, An Unsane World by Greg Hardin, who was like sort of like the mindset coach for Tom Brady. Awesome book about, mindset and personal development. On the real estate side, you kind of already touched on it, but The Best Ever Syndication book by Joe Fairless. If you're wanting to get into syndications, awesome book for you to read as well on the real estate side. Another one, another one I would mention is probably just like one behind me, Tool of the Titans by Tim Ferriss. Various kind of like mini stories from different thought leaders, entrepreneurs, business owners, Sort of like a really good, you know, mindset and business book as well you can read.
Yeah, those are three good ones. The only one of those I have not read that I am going to check out immediately is Staying Sane in an Unsane World. I've heard a few folks mention that one, but I have not checked it out yet. So I will get that on the list. Yep. Good deal. Well, Justin, where can folks learn more about you? I know you've got a website, some social media, but where's the best place to kind of learn what you have going on and possibly connect with you?
Yeah, so goodindevelopment.com. And if you go on my website there on the homepage, I have a free 7-day passive real estate investing course for people to take. So if you're interested in learning more about real estate syndications and what we do, goodindevelopment.com. And right there on the homepage is a free 7-day email course for you to take. Other than that, just Facebook and LinkedIn, just type in Justin Goodin, Goodin, and you can find me.
Okay. Yeah, and we'll drop all those links in the show notes as well. I'm curious with that free resource you had, if somebody, you know, does that and then they want further accountability or coaching or mentorship, do you have any type of program beyond that?
I don't, but yeah, I mean, go to development and they can go to like my contact us page and reach out. I'm happy to connect with anybody as well.
Gotcha. Yeah. And we've got a lot of folks that listen and that are in my network that are investors too. So I will point them and try to, you know, encourage them to check what these development projects are. If you're still raising capital and stuff like that, to connect with you and see some opportunities there. And I'll be doing the same because, you know, I've got some investments that are paying off, you know, coming back here in the next 6 months or so that I'll be looking to deploy somewhere. So I'll definitely be in touch. Justin, I appreciate you taking the time and connecting with me on social media. And, you know, like I said, I enjoy these because I love connecting names and what they're doing to timelines of how they got there. And you did a very good job walking through like every step that you've been through. And one thing that stands out to me is how composed you seem to be. And everything you listed, it's big stuff that you've gotten into, but you seem to have this mindset of just always being calm, never getting too high, never getting too low, and just gritting your way through it. And I love that. And I think there's a lot of lessons that folks can learn from your story and how you just went after it. You know, you didn't let the fear and the fact that you mentioned it earlier, if it was easy, a lot of people would be doing it. You didn't let that scares a lot of people away. Not a lot of people are doing it, so I'm not going to do it because I don't think I can do it. You didn't do that. You connected with the right people, the right mentors, and here you are, you know, doing really big things, and will continue to do so. So I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yep. Yeah, thanks a lot, man. And that'll wrap up another episode of Burning the Ships. And Justin Goodin, appreciate you coming on, and we'll talk soon. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Burning the Ships. I want to give a special thanks to our sponsor, 608B Capital, helping real estate investors secure fast, reliable funding to fuel their boldest moves. If you're ready to take your investing to the next level, visit 608bcapital.com to learn more. If you found value in today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but it also helps us reach more people who are ready to burn the ships and commit fully to their goals. And don't forget to share the episode with someone who needs that extra push to take bold action. I'll leave you with this. Burning the ships isn't just about removing the option to retreat. It's about unlocking the courage to charge forward. No matter the odds, the past is behind you and the future is yours to conquer. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time on Burning the Ships.